Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events of our community here in Central Iowa. I am Mike Metz today, your host for this hour, here in Studio A, along with engineer Mike Murphy, and Milford Township's resident naturalist and good neighbor, Pat Schlerbaum. And joining us via Zoom is Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana. Greetings to you all.
Greetings. Hey.
We look forward to later in the hour listening to Anna and her heart-to-heart messages and Tune In Tuesday messages, but first, a little music.
There's an old friend that I once heard say something that touched my heart, and it began this way. I was born by the river in a little tent, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. He said it's been a long time coming, but I know my change is gonna come. Oh yeah.
And that's the angelic voice from the Queen of Soul and her rendition of a Sam Cooke classic, a change is going to come. Change or metamorphosis is constantly occurring all around us, even with Earth's basic geological building blocks, but without rock-solid evidence, it's difficult to convince some folks. So it's nice to know that there are experts who have invested considerable effort studying and knowing much more about what many of us take for granted. Our first guest, John Hill, Emeritus Professor of Physics, the ISU Department of Astronomy and Physics, is with us today. Welcome to Local Talk, John. John, what we'd like to start with is how you became interested in geology, in rocks and fossils.
Actually, I grew up in Blacksburg, Virginia, and my father was a chemist at Virginia Tech. And Virginia Tech is a university very similar in scope to Iowa State. I had always been fascinated with chemicals and their composition, and I realized that minerals were just chemicals and that rocks were just mixtures of different chemicals. And so that is the way that I began to be interested in rocks and minerals and geology.
So obviously, at your start, you were collecting various specimens. We refer usually to the what you collect as a specimen. And did you catalog these and have a well-documented collection, or did you just pick them up because they looked nice and you wanted to wonder more about them or wanted to know more about them?
Well, first of all, I just picked them up. When I went to graduate school, I renewed my interest in all aspects of geology. And so I collect minerals, I collect fossils, and I cut and polish rocks and minerals. Now, in terms of classification, what I have is every specimen that I want to keep, I give it a number, and I write down where it is from and when I collected it.
And for those listeners who have forgotten their high school science, can you tell us what are the three basic classifications of rock?
Starting from the hottest to the coolest, igneous is the hot rocks, so to speak. They were all formed originally as molten lava from volcanoes or from under the sea. Then the coolest are sedimentary, and sedimentary rocks were basically formed by things like sand or mud being compacted, and then under pressure they form solid rocks. And in between that is metamorphic, which you heard about just now. And metamorphic can be either an igneous rock or a sedimentary rock that has been reformed mostly by pressure and high temperatures.
So an example of an igneous rock would be granite or gneiss, I would assume. And sedimentary, right. Many of us are familiar with limestone or sandstone.
Right. And then an example of metamorphic would be marble, for instance.
Okay.
Which is basically limestone that has undergone high temperatures and pressure to become marble.
Okay. Now, let's talk about minerals for a moment. You were indicating that minerals are a form or of a compound or a collection of elements. Is that correct?
Okay. An example of a mineral that I think most people are familiar with would be quartz. And quartz has a definite chemical composition, and it's composed of one part of the element silicon and two parts of oxygen. So that would be an example of a mineral. Now, an example of a rock would be granite. And granite can be composed of many different minerals, but a typical composition would be quartz or feldspar. Quartz and feldspar and mica. And these are all minerals that contain silica.
So it's their different forms or structures of that same silica-based compound or element.
Right. Well, I think another way to think about it is for a mineral like quartz, the quartz always has the same composition. But for a rock like a granite, the relative amounts of quartz, feldspar, and mica can vary depending on the particular granite that you're looking at. So all granites don't have the same composition, but all minerals like quartz do.
Okay, so an example that you're using for granite would be the, if you're looking at granite and you're seeing a red or a rose granite compared to something that's darker, that would be an example of what you're saying then.
That's right. So if you looked at a rose granite, you might guess that it has a higher composition of feldspar. But if you looked at a dark granite, it would probably have a higher composition of quartz and mica.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about what are considered precious gems or precious stones or those types of things. Would those fall into the category of minerals or a combination and be considered rock?
Different ones are can be labeled differently. If you look, for instance, at a diamond, diamond is pure carbon, whereas a ruby is pure aluminum oxide. Now, a ruby, for instance, is not completely pure aluminum oxide because it has a little bit of impurity to give it a red color. Where a sapphire is also aluminum oxide, just like the ruby, but its blue color is because of a small amount of impurity of a different element from the ruby. So many gems, they are transparent and they are colorful. Now, there are also gems that are not transparent, and a good example of that is agate. Now, we like agates, in particular, rock hounds like to collect agates and cut and polish them because of the different patterns and colors that they have. Now, these agates are mostly silicon dioxide or quartz, but they have impurities in them that give them these different colors.
I was going to say, yes. One of my favorite is some of the agates that I find when I'm around the Lake Superior region, for example. But I assume where you have washouts and things, that's an area where you can have success, varied success in finding those.
Actually, some of the prettiest agates are called Lake Superior agates, and they are found in gravel pits along the Mississippi River. In fact, the rock club that I'm involved with, we have field trips to the Mississippi River to actually look in these gravel pits for agates, and we always find a few.
Okay. Now, you were trying to complete a thought there. I interrupted, so go ahead. After the agate, you were starting to say something.
I guess I wanted to also point out that another beautiful stone are opals. An opal is basically also a silica dioxide type mineral, but it's not crystalline. It's amorphous. But because of the structure of the mineral, you get these nice flashes of color. And so opal is another favorite of mine.
Okay. Now, John, you used a term, a label, Rockhound. Is that a breed of dog?
Yeah. Probably not. I have seen some of my friends that bring their dogs along to field trips. But Rockhound basically is a term for a person who likes to go and look for rocks.
Okay. Let's segue a little bit into fossils. And I use the Rockhound and the fossil and the bone as the connector here. Can you tell our listeners briefly, because we only have about 5 minutes, what determines or what are the conditions needed to form a fossil? What is a fossil and what are the conditions needed to form them?
Okay. A fossil is a remnant of a life form from the past. And the fossils are mostly found in sedimentary rocks because these are rocks that have not been having their details destroyed by heat and pressure. Fossils actually go back to about 3 billion years. Such fossils are very small and hard to find. Now, it's easy to find fossils that have ages of 200,000, 300,000 years, and many of these fossils can be found in Iowa. Now, how the fossils form, well, there are many different ways, but a standard way is an animal or a sea animal with a shell that is buried by mud, and then that mud is compressed to form a rock, but the outlines of the animal or the shell of the animal is preserved. Another entirely different way that you can find very nice examples of fossils are insects trapped in amber. And this amber is basically the fossilized resin from conifers, and the animals become trapped. And because they're embedded in the amber, the details of the animal are very, very well preserved. So that's another type of fossil that's important.
Okay, thanks for that definition. We have about a minute. Can you just talk, if there's somebody out there interested in a local organization, can you talk briefly about the CIMS, the Central Iowa Mineral Society, for like-minded folks?
The Central Iowa Mineral Society, meets once a month in Des Moines on the Drake campus on the first Friday of the month. This is a society for anybody that's interested in any form of geology, fossils, minerals. Now, during the meeting, we have a program on some subject in geology. And for instance, for February, I'm going to give a program on Pietria dura, which is basically art that is created out of stones. Of course, now we are meeting on Zoom, but I should also point out that the Central Iowa Mineral Society does have a Facebook page, so you can look us up on that.
Okay.
And actually, I believe you have my email address, so if somebody is interested and would want to send me an email, I would be glad to answer them.
That sounds great, John. We're going to wrap this up. I think Pat Schlierbaum has one question for you.
One quick question, Professor Hill. Mike Metz has used this term, nice, piece of nice. What is nice, then?
Okay. Nice is, actually, I looked that up last night, and it is basically metamorphic, and it's been formed mostly from igneous rocks, but the characteristic of the gneiss is that it has sort of layered patterns in it.
Okay.
So, we're going to have to invite you back. This is we're just getting our feet wet, so to speak, and we'd like to have you back and really appreciate the knowledge you've shared with us this morning, John. That was John Hill, Professor Emeritus of the Physics Department, and we're going to now welcome Maddie Anderson, Story County Democratic Party Chair. And hello, Maddie. Can you share with our listeners what is going to happen during the local inauguration plans?
What we are doing locally is that we are having an event at North River Valley Park at 3:30 p.m., and we will be broadcasting over an FM transmitter on 87.9 to hear our program. Linda Merkin will be our MC. She's the Story County Supervisor. And then we will hear from Jackie Norris, who was the senior advisor for the Biden campaign. We're also accepting food bank donations to donate to Food at First. So we're encouraging attendees to bring a food donation if they are able.
That will definitely help support folks locally who are in need at this time. So,
yeah, and people who wanted to make a monetary donation, we ask that you just make that to the food bank directly rather than bringing it to us.
Oh, great. Okay. What, because of the inauguration and because of the COVID situation, are there going to be safety measures taken?
Well, people will remain in their vehicle. And as we are handing out programs and we have a bumper sticker to give to attendees, the people who are doing that will be wearing masks and gloves, and you'll only interact with one person during that time. And then you'll just tune into your radio and listen and stay in your vehicle.
So tune into that radio. And can you give us that frequency one more time?
Yes, 87.9. And you do have to be there at the park because it's a very short range, so you can't just be anywhere in town and listen to it. You will have to come to the park.
Sure, it's a local transmission. So,
right. Yes.
What's going on as far as any updates in the Democrat Party? Do you have some of those to share with us today?
Not particularly. The only thing really coming up is that there is going to be a new chair elected of the Iowa Democratic Party, and that election is going to be this coming Saturday. And the people that get a vote for that are the state central committee members who are elected by each individual district at the state convention that was held last year. So those are the people that vote in that election.
Okay. What are some of the things that you or some of the individuals that you're socializing with here are looking forward to as far as the inauguration address and some of the activities?
Well, let's see. It's going to begin at about 9 a.m. The coverage will start, I know, on NBC. More than likely, all of the major networks are going to have special coverage starting at that time or earlier. And then the actual inaugural events are going to begin at 10 a.m. our time. And there's going to be the national anthem, the Pledge of Allegiance. There will be some musical performances and a poetry reading. And then the actual swearing in will just be shortly after 11 a.m. our time. And it's President Biden will be sworn in by Chief Justice Roberts, and Vice President Kamala Harris will be sworn in by Justice Sotomayor.
And I understand that the president is going to be using two Bibles, if I remember right, to be sworn in.
Yes, one of them I know is his family Bible, and I'm not sure what the other one is, but I had read that he has a very large family Bible that is going to be...
Are there some local issues that the Democrat Party are concerned about in the next couple of months, maybe with the new legislative session that meeting right now?
Well, one of them that I have concern about is the death penalty. And what they are looking at is reinstating it for people who are over 18 at the time that their crime was committed, and for crimes against children, you know, murdering children, which I understand that many people feel that's an appropriate punishment for that crime. My concern is that the justice system has not always been really good at making sure that the people who have been convicted have actually committed the crime. So that's a major concern.
Okay. Again, why don't you, just for our listeners, review the time, place, and frequency for the gathering for the inauguration?
For the local one, it will be at 3:30 at North River Valley Park, and the address for that is 725 East 13th Street. And those are the softball fields that are on the north side of 13th Street, East 13th. Mm-hmm. And our program will be airing at 87.9 FM.
And for those who maybe aren't quite familiar, there's plenty of parking in that area next to those ball diamonds. And with the little wisp of snow that we had this morning and maybe forecast, there shouldn't be any problems as far as any weather-related activities. At least that's we're hopeful on that. And I've just got to think that the sun's going to break through at some point during that day in those activities.
I certainly hope so. The city does plow that lot, so unless there was enough snow that they were not able to do the streets first and didn't get to that lot, I don't think that we're going to have a problem there. They get to that lot pretty quickly. Something else I did want to mention, too, is that today at 4:30, the Biden campaign, I should say President Biden's inaugural committee, is suggesting that people at 4:30 light a candle and put it in their window as a memorial for those that we have lost to COVID-19. So I hope that
what a nice gesture. I think that's very good. And that you say is at 4:30 this afternoon?
Correct.
Okay, 4:30. And so those of you who are at home or maybe even at your business, if it's allowed, and you feel so inclined, that would be a good memorial. Light the candles. So,
yeah, and a lot of public buildings will be lit across the country as well.
Okay. Pat, do you have anything to share? Or
light a...
Pat Schlerbaum's got just a little something he's going to... He's got to come over to the only one microphone that's operating.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you so much, Matty. Yes, I was just going to make the remark of light a candle and wear your mask.
Yes. Yeah, everybody who will be interacting with our attendees will be masked and gloved as well. And okay. I suggest that people bring their mask because they're going to have to roll down the window to get their program and their bumper sticker. But if they prefer not to, they can just give us a wave and drive on by. So yeah. That's fine, too. But
that sounds
we do
good.
Ask that they wear a mask if they're going to roll down their window and interact with us.
Okay. Any parting words, Matty, before we move on to our next guest?
I would just add that there's going to be a star-studded event called Celebrating America later on that evening that will be carried live on all of the major networks.
Okay. And star-studded, you're talking about stars in the movie and the entertainment world as opposed to looking up in the night sky.
Correct. I've heard some of the names announced, but I'm not sure who is going to be. I believe that J-Lo is going to be before the swearing in, and the other entertainers will be later in the evening.
Okay.
So Lady Gaga's one I had heard about, Garth Brooks. There's many. I just don't remember who all of them are.
Sounds great. Okay, thank you, Matty. We have been listening and talking, visiting with Matty Anderson, Story County Democrat Party Chair. And again, they're going to have an event tomorrow at East Riverside Park at the Ball Diamonds. And please tune in at that time. I'm sure they're going to have some ply cards there as well as those folks who didn't hear what the frequency is. They'll have that available, and you can just tune your radio to that and listen to the activities. And with
actually, it's North River Valley, not East. North River Valley.
I'm sorry. North River Valley, the northern portion of East River Valley Park, the north side. Very, very good for clarification purposes. All right. We're going to welcome now Susan Guiasta, City of Ames. And hello, Susan. How are we?
Things are going well right now. I was a little surprised by the little dusting of snow we got.
Yeah, I too. The cat was leaving tracks out between the house and the barn this morning, so I know she was looking for her breakfast.
I don't think it's going to accumulate very much like your other guest just talked about. I don't think we're expecting a lot of snow, but our snowplow drivers are always ready to clear the streets and the parking lots when called on. So they've been pretty busy this season so far.
Yeah, I drive a portion of 13th Street, and so I was following the salt truck in this morning to get to the station. So there's at least one employee out there who's worth his salt.
they're all worth their salt.
Yes, I don't want to belittle anybody. They're definitely out there doing yeoman's work, that's for sure. Susan, do you have anything to share?
Yeah, I just have a couple of reminders. Tonight is the Capital Improvement Plan Workshop. It is a workshop Tuesday, and actually it has an early start at 5:15. This is for the departments that have very large purchases they make. We plot those out on a five-year plan, and that plan is presented each year to the council. We look at where we are in these large projects. Things like large equipment purchases, street constructions, all those things are sort of laid out in the capital improvements plan. So a variety of departments will be available tonight to present their plans to the council. The council can ask questions. Those meetings are, as we've talked about before, held on Zoom. And the way to participate is you can get the links off our website, cityofames.org. As we talked about last week, we have a big meeting, a public input meeting coming up on Thursday for the downtown plaza. This is generating a lot of interaction on our social media pages. People have a lot of thoughts about the 1-acre parking lot directly east of City Hall. And that would be developed into green space with a potential outdoor ice rink, some landscaping, benches, shade structure, maybe some water play features. And the one thing that we haven't mentioned that has a lot of people kind of up in arms is some of that parking would be replaced right in front of City Hall with some off-street parking on Clark. And then there's some other plans in place to replace. There's about 70 or 80 parking spaces that would be displaced by this project. And we would not probably come up with all 70 to 80, but there would be trade-offs in parking in other locations.
Okay. That's a good clarification on that point. Is there anything else before we switch over to Chief Rich Higgins?
No. As I like to do occasionally, I like to bring in Fire Chief Rich Higgins because he is our community coordinator for COVID. He has a lot of meetings about COVID with community partners. And he has updates. He also kind of has his thumb on the pulse of how vaccinations are going and how our numbers look. So I always like to check in with Rich.
Sounds good. Hello, Rich.
Good morning, everybody.
How are things going in your department?
Things are going really well. The crews are definitely keeping busy, working through COVID and just the normal call volume right now with just the normal calls we'd go on, whether there's COVID going on right now or not. So crews are definitely keeping busy. We have kind of the first of the year transfers, moving people around. They're getting settled in. And yeah, things are going well here.
Now, when you talk about transfers, that's from one station to another, or what do you mean by that?
Correct. Yep. So in Ames, we're lucky enough to have three fire stations. And the first of the year, we usually rotate a handful of people just to make sure we're getting experience in different districts on different apparatus. Each station has its own unique responsibilities. So we try to shift people around so they get an opportunity to be on our ladder truck, also to be out in campus town, be up at headquarters here at station number one. So it's a fun time of year to see some new faces at the station that maybe you don't get to see every day.
Okay. So just to remind our listeners, there's a station located on 13th Street, just northwest of the hospital area, and then down on Duff, there's one by the just past or south of Highway 30, between 30 and I believe that's Airport Road intersection.
Yep.
And the third one over in the campus town area is located where?
That is right at the intersection of Welch and Chamberlain.
Okay. All right. Let's segue into getting back to COVID and some of the latest information that you've got there. What are we seeing in the community these days?
Yeah, so we're battling COVID one shot, one vaccine at a time. And for every community member that's able to get the shot, we're urging ahead. We keep moving forward, and that's been great. So right now, I know within the city of Ames, within our organization, the fire department has been able to get vaccinated. We've had 48 out of 60 members so far. We still have a handful of other members that will be getting vaccinated. However, if you've had COVID, you have to wait so many, I think it's 3 weeks, they want you to wait before you get the vaccine. So we have a handful of people that are waiting to get vaccinated in that area. But the process has gone really well. Our partnership with Story County Public Health, Les White and her team over there have done an outstanding job of working to get people vaccinated in that 1A group, which I think they're hoping to wrap up by the end of this month and start to move into that 1B group that 1st of February.
Okay, so the health department, Story County Health Department, is administering the injections then for the groups?
Correct, yep, for that 1A group, they are doing that local. So we actually go over to public health and they are able to give the vaccine. We've had quite a few people that have already got their second dose for the fire department, and it's gone great. We haven't seen any side effects. We have seen a few, and let me talk about those just okay. to help ease people's mind. I think the biggest side effect we've seen has been maybe just a little bit of a sore arm to the touch, kind of like a little bit of a bruise, very similar to what you'd get with the flu shot. And I only know of one person who had any other side effects in addition to the sore arm, and that was just a little bit of fatigue, slight fever that next day. But in talking with them, it sounded like that was pretty common even after the flu shot, that they had those minor side effects. So we're pretty excited. You know, when you get a vaccine, you hear some horror stories of all these side effects. And we just didn't experience that in our department with the vaccine we were able to get. So.
Yeah, that sounds great. You indicated that there's a waiting time between the two injections, and I believe that's based on which of the two that are currently available. One is a 3-week and one is a 28-day suggested wait or between those. The side effects that you are experiencing, it sounds like those are more local injection site related, but in effect, my understanding is, talking with the county public health folks, that it has to do with the fact that your immunity system is operating correctly, that's part of the game.
Yeah, so that's a good thing. It's a we've been lucky that there hasn't been any side effects worth I mean, it's worth mentioning, but I mean, there hasn't been any severe. Sometimes we see things on the news that make it out to be something really bad, and it hasn't been. The vaccine is just, it's been great.
Yeah. Now, I know that some of the facilities, the nursing care facilities and that, have been getting it as well. What about other individuals within the Ames departments? I assume the EMS, emergency folks, are there others?
Not yet. We are working towards that. That's come through state guidance, through local Story County Public Health, and then they work within the guidelines, the orders that the governor and Iowa Department of Public Health have issued on what's next. And so law enforcement will be that next group that moves in as part of that 1B group, is identified by IDPH. And I think school teachers are in that listing as well. So that 1B group is a really big category, and that's going to take a while. And if you remember, we started vaccinating here locally that week of Christmas. They started giving out shots, and I think the hospital might have started the Thursday prior to Christmas week. So we're just a few weeks in, and there's been quite a few people that have been able to get the vaccine. And one of the nice things the state has done is on their coronavirus.iowa.gov website, where you can track all the statistics, they've also created a vaccine administration page. It's a link right on the front of the page that you can click on that, and it'll give you all the data of where they're at. And unfortunately, it looks like the last time it was updated was Friday, January 15th, but they have the number of doses for the state of Iowa, how many people have gotten both doses, how many have gotten Pfizer versus Moderna. But then they also break it down by county, so we can see that in Story County, as of Friday, there's been 4,421 doses administered by the county for the vaccine. So we're making progress, slow and steady, but we're getting there. And I know McFarland Clinic is gearing up to do vaccines as soon as they're available for the general public, which I know we're still a ways out. But Roger Klusner and his team over at McFarland have a great plan for their goal is to vaccinate 1,000 people a day. So they're in the background creating this plan, getting retired nurses to come in and help move the vaccine forward to get it out to the public as quickly as possible.
That sounds like a great plan. Do you know, have they talked about having a couple of satellite points so there isn't all the crowding right there at the facility, maybe a few more in the community, or do you not know about that?
I haven't heard a whole lot. I know typically public health uses the pod approach, points of distribution, to deliver vaccines. And so I'm sure that Les White and her team are talking about that and trying to figure out different locations. They're also teaming up with pharmacies. I know there's today and tomorrow over at Green Hills, they're giving over 400 vaccines, and that's being done through a pharmacy. I think Northcrest has done the same last week. So working with these points of distribution, with pharmacies, I think a lot of people are going to get have access to the vaccine shortly. It's just waiting and making sure they're getting some of those groups that have been identified by the state, getting those done first so that essential services can continue. And yeah, just keep moving forward. So it's exciting times, but I know it's not moving as quickly as we would like, but I know all hands are on deck to keep moving this forward.
Okay, so the site that you were referring to that tracks the numbers, the numbers that you quoted, those are the total in Story County at this time, or are there the other facilities that aren't being counted yet? Do you know for sure? Is that the total?
Yeah, so they have total doses administered by recipient counties, and then they also have total doses administered by county of vaccine. So they break it down into a couple different categories. So I encourage listeners to go out and look at the website. It's still really new. So it's a work in progress, but it's a great start for the state to help us keep track of where the doses, how many people are getting vaccine, which is encouraging for me. I'll be honest with you, it gets tiresome every morning looking at the numbers and seeing an increase in the number of positive cases. So it's encouraging to have a website that I can go to that shows the number of people that we're actively fighting against COVID now. So these are good numbers. I'd like to see keep going up and up every day.
Sounds good. So we've got the ball rolling on distribution. You've mentioned that there will be various points that the injections will be occurring, hopefully, in the future, especially for those that aren't on those top two tiers of category. And it looks like we're at least rolling in the right direction for this, and we just need to have some patience. And we need to remind those folks that even if you've been vaccinated or you've gotten your second follow-up, you still need to wear your mask and take all the appropriate safety measures, the physical distancing and washing of hands.
Absolutely. Thanks. That's a great point. Yep. Even though you're vaccinated, you still have to do your part for the community, for your neighbors, for your family, for your friends, your coworkers. Continue to wear your mask, wash your hands, stay home if you're sick, and use that physical distancing. So absolutely right. Appreciate your help.
Great. What just one follow-up question on numbers of vaccine amounts available, doses available. Have you heard anything as far as the ramping up by some of the companies or the availability from other distributors? Is that a report that you get to see?
No, that would not be one that I am hearing a whole lot about. I'm sure Les White and her team, as well as Mary Greeley and McFarland, are okay. Well in tune with that. And unfortunately, that's something I can't speak to. I hope they are.
Yeah.
I hope that they're ramping up production and get distribution. It was interesting hearing the news how some different companies that have mastered logistics are stepping in and wanting to help out. It was pretty encouraging to see Starbucks, Microsoft, a handful of other companies that really know logistics, know how to get items from point A to point B, wanted to help the government be successful at this. And I think that's what it's going to take. It's the same approach here in our community. It's going to take all of us to defeat COVID, to get ahead of this. It's not a one-person game. So to see everybody want to be a part of that and make a difference is really encouraging. And, we're seeing that locally, too, with everybody stepping up and doing their part. There's not too many places you can go in Ames where you don't see somebody wearing a mask. Everyone's doing their part, and that's how we're going to continue to get ahead.
The message that you're putting forward, and I will admit that I was not around, but this sounds like what had to be taken, what was needed in order to defeat the enemy, and in this case it's the COVID that occurred during World War II and even World War I, where everybody did their part and they didn't, you know, we all have our independent rights, but with those rights come responsibilities to yourself, your neighbors, and your community.
Absolutely. For me, it's a pride of it's a point of pride to be part of something bigger than just myself, and that's what we've really encouraged to do, or encourage people to do, is think of it more than just themselves. They're, like you said, doing it for their neighbor, for their community, and that's a story that we'll be excited to tell our grandkids, great grandkids, people that look back in history. They'll be able to say, "Hey, wow, Story County really rallied together. Community partners came together to defeat COVID, and they were successful." And that's what the story, that's what I want that legacy to be, is how we came together as a community to defeat COVID.
Okay, Rick, thanks for that positive message. Susan, is there anything else we you need to share with our listeners? Or no, we're good to go. Let's just enjoy the halfway pleasant winter weather and keep wearing those masks, socially distancing. I don't like that term. I like physical distancing, because we all like to remain social. And wash your hands. And thanks again, Chief Rich Higgins and Susan Guiasta from the City of Ames. And now, without further ado, we have...
I don't know, but you know what? It gives me a chance to do a congratulations to the City of Ames and the committee that made yesterday's Martin Luther King Day celebration possible online last night. So I logged in. I thought it was an amazing celebration. So thank you to the city.
Okay. Let's start with what you've got for us. But before we do that, Anna, I have to admit that this morning I really don't have a question or a joke for you today. So you're going to have to put on your slippers so you don't fall for that little stretch in the truth I just shared.
That's a great introduction. That's better than Harry. Good job. Well, as you know, Mike Metz, it is Tune In Tuesday as I try and tempt you to listen to KHOI. So let me confess also that I am an incredibly lazy person. I regularly opt for a bowl of cereal for my dinner, so I am always tempted to get takeout to provide a variety of mealtime choices. Otherwise, it is just a bowl of Frosted Flakes. So this is why I am amused by the poem I found titled Takeout by Doug Heyman that goes like this. It's raining and snowing. I'm hungry. Who's going? You go. No, you go. My karma's not flowing. That's a bogus excuse as I ever did hear. It's just nasty weather of what do you fear? Whatever does high down the road for the pie will be a hero to all. This is no lie. So you assume that it's pizza, not Greek or Chinese. What if it's Italian? My palate will please. Perhaps it's salad I crave. How would you know? You have yet to ask. Who cares? Man, just go. Into the elements, close my eyes, and just dive. So my stomach will fill, so to eat and survive. Wait just a minute. I don't have to shiver. We will get the pizza. I forgot. They deliver. Ha ha ha.
You know, that little pizza line reminds me. I have a nephew that he went through a phase. I bet for almost a year he wanted nothing for every meal but pizza, pizza, pizza.
But that's not a bad thing. It's got vegetables on it. It's got dairy cheese. It's sort of like Bill Cosby's The Whole Thing with the Chocolate Cake for Breakfast. It's got dairy, eggs, and all that. So I did find this poem amusingly and entertaining for many reasons, and also wanted to give it as a way of previewing what will be featured on the Donna Lana Kitchen Show today. So they will look at how COVID-19 has affected local restaurants, and Sharon Stewart of the Lockwood Cafe is their featured guest, and they will talk about creative takeout strategies. So I'm going to be tuning in because I want to know what the creative takeout strategies are, especially these days when you're, I do miss and go to the cafe and Provisions and Cafe Boudelaire and just sitting there, even Village Inn. I miss it so much going to restaurants. It's just not the same getting takeout and eating in front of my computer watching Netflix and gobbling down Chinese takeout.
Well, you know, you mentioned Village Inn, and everybody associates them, I think, with pie, but there are a number of other outlets that we'll be able to get our pie for March 14th here this year, some really good outlets. So for those of you who don't understand the March 14th reference, it's 3.14 for those lovers of pie.
I got it. I was with you, Mike Metz. I knew what you were talking about.
Okay. What else have you got, Anna?
Well, the Don Alana Kitchen, that's not all. They're packed full of information, as this dynamic duo will also be talking about the Practical Farmers of Iowa Annual Conference. It's a whole range of speakers and events, all online, coming up January 21 through the 23rd. And the Don Alana Kitchen will be presenting a session live from Donna's Kitchen as part of this conference. That's pretty exciting. So, again, what is this Don Alana Kitchen show? Don Alana Kitchen talks about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Chef Donna and Farmer Lana explore the local food scene with a lively discussion and good humor, both at noon on Tuesday and repeated at 7 p.m., so tune in. Now, Mike Metz, did you know that Alexander Graham Bell wanted people to answer calls with, "Ahoy!" When the public started using the telephone in the 1800s, inventor Alexander Graham Bell decided that the phone call should be answered with "Ahoy!" instead of "Hello." However, Thomas Edison wanted users to answer the phone with "Hello." Edison's term obviously won out, and by 1880, "Ahoy!" was just something a pirate would say. So anywho, I forgot to call you up and say, "Hello, ahoy," or "Howdy," and then ask, "So what will you and Sam Wormley be discussing at 4 p.m. on Science Bites today?" So you're here now. Ahoy! What are you going to be talking about?
Isn't it interesting? You can hear "ahoy" a lot better across the space than you can hear "hello." Well, what we're going to be talking about, Anna, is we're going to continue our Women in Science series with the follow-up portion of the interview with Beth Larrabee. Mary Richards interviewed her on our last segment, and I'm in the process of removing the dirt editorially so we can talk about soils.
Nice. I'll definitely be tuning into that. I love the Women in Science theme. That's great. Now, if you tune in tonight at 8:30 p.m., you get to spend time with me for the Heart to Heart Messages show. I select songs to match the guest messages for the Heart to Heart conversations. So tonight, Judy Trumpy and Barb Wheelock will be sharing what is in their heart about being part of Braver Angels, which is an organization I learned about here on Local Talk. Braver Angels was inspired by the words of Abraham Lincoln, who not only called on Americans to summon the better angels of our nature, but called on us to find the courage needed to pursue a more perfect union, with malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right. So I'm thinking, especially because it is Inauguration Week, it is a perfect time to have Braver Angels on to talk about how we have civil discussion when we disagree. Now, see if you can guess the song I selected from me reading the dedication and the lyrics. You ready, Mike Metz and Mike Murphy? To all those red and blue friendships that emerge across the political divide, I dedicate these lyrics to you. Purple toupee will show the way when summer brings you down. Purple toupee is here to stay after the hair has gone away. We're on some kind of mission. We have an obligation. We have to wear toupees. So Mike Metz, Mike Murphy, and Pat, don't want to forget Pat, can you guess the song?
I know what it is. I know. I got the words ahead of time, so I know this one.
All right.
Love is a many splendored thing.
Wrong again. But you can also find out if you were right, which you were wrong, by tuning in to KHOI 89.1 FM tonight at 8:30 to hear that song. Now it is time for Anna Banana to split. So until next time, I hope that your days are connected to a community of love, care, and support that is KHOI, the heart of Iowa, which is you and me. And so back to you, Mike Metz.
And thank you, Anna Banana. This is Pat Schlarbaum. You have been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Live streaming of our broadcast can be found online at khoifm.org.
And this program is produced by Lynn Carey and Ursula Rudenberg and is engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Michael. You heard from Dr. John Hill, Emeritus Professor of Physics, and Maddie Anderson, Story County Democrat Party Chair. And we also heard from Susan Guiasta, City of Ames Information Officer, and Ames Fire Chief Rich Higgins. I have been your host, Mike Metz.
Please consider becoming a member of this fine community radio station with your financial support. Go to our website at khoifm.org and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member.
Anna?
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And
we'll see you again on the radio.